This is KJZZ, your news and information station in Phoenix and across Arizona. I'm Tiara Vian, and here are this week's stories you don't want to miss. It's the podcast designed to catch you up on some highlights from around the region. Thanks for listening. Here are a few of the stories for the week of September 2nd, 2024. Summer of 2024 has been Phoenix's hottest ever. In spite of that, fewer people appear to have died as a result of heat in Maricopa County this year compared to last. If the numbers are confirmed, it would be the first year-over-year drop in heat-related deaths in a decade. Catherine Davis-Young has more.
177 heat deaths are confirmed and hundreds more are under investigation. But David Hondula with Phoenix's Office of Heat Response and Mitigation says the slight drop compared to last year could be a sign that heat relief efforts are paying off. A major change in the city's strategy this year was to keep some cooling centers open in the evenings or overnight. Hondula says thousands have used those sites and hundreds of visitors have been referred to treatment or shelter.
We're talking about lives that have been changed, and we're very confident that when we look at the data at the end of the season, we'll also be able to see that lives were saved from these locations.
Hondula says the city also benefited this year from closer collaboration with the county. The county hired a cooling center coordinator and made other new investments this year. Dr. Nick Staub is with Maricopa County Public Health.
This is the kind of operation you really can't just stand it up real quickly and respond effectively. So I think it does take dedicated personnel who are working on this all year long.
Staub says heat relief in future summers will depend on funding. Federal pandemic aid that paid for many of this year's programs will run out in 2026. Catherine Davis-Young, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In health news. Last month, a judge determined that Access, Arizona's version of Medicaid, had improperly issued contracts to healthcare companies that provide long-term care services to 26,000 older adults and people with physical disabilities. Access has until early next week to decide what it will do, leaving some families worried and uncertain. Kathy Ritchie has the details.
Oh, that's a nice smile. Yeah, she has a beautiful smile normally. Hi, Mommy.
Sarah Scoville Weaver is sitting on her 78-year-old mother, Sheila Scoville's, twin bed at her group home in Scottsdale. Sheila has late-stage Alzheimer's disease.
It's just such a beautiful home. They are fully trained in dementia, which is the only one that I've found where the staff actually have certified training.
And this home takes Altex, Arizona's long-term care system, which helps pay for her mother's care. But in December, Access, which oversees Altex, announced that many members would be switching to new health plans. It awarded contracts to Arizona Complete Health and United Healthcare. The health plan that pays Sheila's $4,800 monthly room and board did not get a contract.
Finding a home that is clean and where I don't need to come every day to check on her and make sure she's okay, that's everything to us.
In Arizona, the median cost of long-term care can run anywhere between $5,500 and $9,400 a month. And most Arizonans, like Sarah and her mother, can't afford that without Altex. So, fearful of not being able to keep her mother in the home she loves, Sarah called Access, hoping for a solution.
And they said, "We have no idea what you're talking about." I called again every month. After, I left voicemails for several supervisors, never heard back.
Then in June, Sarah gets an undated letter from Access about the two new providers.
And this is the only communication I've ever received from Access, talking to me about the notice of change.
The letter also states that her mother had been enrolled in Arizona Complete Health.
And this enrollment assignment was made in order to ensure a smooth transition for both you and your caregivers. I called the owner of my mom's group home right away and I said, "Do you have either of these plans?" And he said, "No."
Sarah panics.
And so I immediately called Access and was told out the gate, you know, I called and I said, I don't know what to do. I got this letter. And they said, "Yeah, you need to choose."
Between the plan her mother was assigned and United Healthcare. And she has to choose by July 31st, even though the owner of the group home hadn't contracted with either carrier.
And I said, "Well, you know, what if I stick with Arizona Complete, but he gets United?" And they said, "Then you have to move her. You'll have 90 days of coverage and then you have to move her." And I said, "Well, that's unacceptable to me."
Sarah is running out of time. The group home owner has applied to Arizona Complete Health and it's a waiting game. Meanwhile, Sarah is pushing. She Googles a phone number for Access CEO Carmen Heredia and leaves a message.
I got a call back the same day from a representative for access, not Miss Heredia. And she told me basically the same thing.
Then Sarah finds out about the upcoming State Medicaid Advisory Committee meeting, known as SMAC, in which several access leaders are set to attend virtually, including Carmen Heredia.
And then at the very end was a public comment, which I spoke at.
I'm my mother's only guardian. I'm her entirely responsible for her. I did not wish to be, but I am. And this is a very, very serious decision for me to make.
At the meeting, Access Deputy Assistant Director Christina Quast explains that the July 31st deadline was so the agency could prepare for the October 1st transition to the new health plans, and that they are aware of those providers that have yet to be contracted.
And encouraging, pushing, highly encouraging, strongly encouraging, to the extent we can with the managed care organization that they contract with those providers. And I want to be clear that even if a contract doesn't come to pass, does not necessarily mean you have to move your mother. There's various things that could occur.
Like a special case agreement, she says, where the health plan would come into an agreement for a specific member's care. But for Sarah, who has repeatedly been told that if she chooses the wrong health plan, she'll have no choice but to move her mother, it goes back to being forced to make an impossible decision without all of the information. Even CEO Heredia tells Sarah that it's the agency's obligation to make sure people don't fall through the cracks.
It sounds like you're very frustrated and that you are stuck in a predicament. And I think there's a lot for us to learn from this experience.
In a statement to KJZZ, an Access spokesperson said that the agency has learned from the initial implementation period the effectiveness of different communication methods. After all of that, it's still another waiting game. Days after the judge determined there were flaws in the procurement process, Access announced that it was pausing the October 1st transition and members would remain with their current health plan. Kathy Ritchie, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. Thanks for listening. How well do you know the Grand Canyon State? Our A to Z quiz will test your knowledge of all things Arizona, like what is the official dinosaur of Arizona? It's one of this week's questions. Try it out at play.kjzz.org. In politics news, Maricopa County election officials say general election ballots will be 2 pages long for the first time since 2006. From the politics desk, Cameron Sanchez reports.
The county anticipated long ballots, but didn't finish the ballot building process until recently. The pages are front and back, and the average number of contests on each ballot will be 79, though the exact number varies within the county depending on where the voters reside. County election spokesperson Jennifer Lewer.
The most important thing for voters is to plan ahead. Make sure they're registered by October 7th, and then potentially consider voting early if they haven't done so in the past.
Lewer says there are a few reasons for the longer ballots. One is a high number of ballot measures. Another is the fact that the Green Party candidates are officially recognized this year. Cameron Sanchez, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
Now from KJZZ Original Productions. A New York-based company bought thousands of acres of land in La Paz County. Now one water official is worried about the water under it. Here are the show co-hosts Lauren Gilger and Mark Brody.
Water Asset Management describes itself on its website as a, quote, global investor in companies and assets that ensure water quality and supply. It's also bought land in other western states. As the Arizona Daily Star reported, the land in La Paz County is in a basin that by law is approved for groundwater transfers. That means the water could end up in more urban parts of the state. Some residents of La Paz County are already concerned about other firms using local groundwater to grow crops shipped to other countries. One of those people who's concerned is County Supervisor Holly Irwin. She talked about it with my co-host, Mark Brody, and they started with why this deal is such a problem to her.
Water, as you are well aware, has become a major issue. I've been dealing with water issues in La Paz County since 2015, when it first got put on my radar. And so, the ultimate threat is being targeted as a sacrificial lamb, you know, to supplement the urban areas within the state. And so it's been a growing concern of mine, not if, but when they try to come after, the waters that are in the groundwater that's in our basins, as well as the surface water on the Colorado River, which we're seeing both.
So my understanding is that this particular land, and specifically the water underneath it, is approved under state law for groundwater transfers. So, like, is it surprising that something like this would have happened in this particular place?
You know what? I didn't learn about that particular part of the basin till a few years back, you know, when it was mentioned as I started doing research on groundwater and the basins within La Paz County. And, you know, then, of course, in dealing with our representatives, they were like, you know that these are in statute. And I was literally floored. You know, I couldn't believe that, you know, we actually have three transfer basins within our county, you know, for water transfers. So it almost makes it impossible to try to fight for protection when the leaders previous to me at the state level had put in, you know, statutes for to allow for these transfers to take place.
Has there been any effort, or do you anticipate there being an effort to try to undo that, to make it so that, you know, these are not available for transferring water to more urban areas of the state?
I will do whatever it takes in my power to try to fight these transfers, or, you know, anything I can do to fight to keep the water within La Paz County, you know, being a representative for our county and for the people, you know, that I do represent, my constituents. You know, I have a duty to try to fight for them to keep the water here and protect our future and theirs as well.
How big of an impact could this water leaving La Paz County have on the people who live there, the farmers who live there?
You know, it's going to have a major impact because, you know, we're already seeing issues within that basin. You know, already have constituents that have lost their wells. Some have had to replace their wells twice now. You know, so you add this on into the mix and it's just going to make the problem worse.
As you say, you've been looking at this and working on this issue for some time. And I know you and I have spoken in the past about some of what you're seeing and what you're hearing from your constituents, from your neighbors about their particular situations. What have you been hearing recently in terms of, you know, wells potentially running dry or subsidence on particular pieces of land?
So there's two things there. So land subsidence definitely is an issue. Since I've been in office since 2009, I've literally experienced damages from 100-year floods out in these areas in the Windon and Siloam area, and land subsidence definitely has played a part in the amount of damage that we are receiving because of the land, you know, dropping. So that's became a major issue, and you know, I had been contacted just as recently as 2 weeks ago to an air park that had lost their well out in the Siloam area. You know, and that was just 2 weeks ago. And this is stuff that comes up all the time, you know, where you're hearing somebody that had to replace their well. There's another RV park out in Windon area where they had to replace their well, I believe less than a year ago, you know, and that cost them well over $100,000 to replace theirs. You know, these are just, you know, unfortunately, it's almost became the norm, you know, which is unfortunate because it shouldn't be that way.
Is there anything that you can do short of changing state law to try to keep some of this water in La Paz County?
Well, and I've been working along with other supervisors as well as previous representatives, you know, trying to form more of a local control type of a management area, because we're the ones that are dealing with the issues every week, it seems like. And, you know, we've been trying to fight to get some sort of protection, an alternative to the AMAs and the INAs, you know, but it's very difficult to try to do that when you can't even get a hearing on a bill down at the Capitol. So it's been extremely frustrating.
Does it matter to you if the water that is leaving La Paz County is going to a place like Phoenix, or if it's being used, for example, to grow alfalfa to send to another country? Like, does it matter to you what the use of that water is if it's not being used by La Paz County residents?
It should be being used by La Paz County residents and the county as well, period. You know, we shouldn't be a county that's just a sacrificial lamb for another.
What do you hear from your constituents about the fact that in this case, you know, a group has come in and bought all this land to move the water to urban areas of the state, or, you know, some of the other water related issues that have been going on there over the past few years?
For right now, because this just came up recently, I think there's a lot of, oh my gosh, you know, a lot of shock going on right now that how could this possibly happen, you know, but who are we to say who's to sell their land to? You know, we don't have a right to do that either. The only thing I can try to do is protect the water that we have within our basin. And, you know, again, that's been the biggest challenge that I've faced my whole entire career. We're just a little county. You know, we only have 3 supervisors that are in our county, but it's definitely a bigger issue, not just here in La Paz County, but in my sister counties as well, you know, there are neighboring ones, and it's not just Arizona. We, you know, you need to take a look at the bigger picture and who these investors are. They're grabbing up land all over the western portion of this country. We don't have the money to be able to purchase that land. You know, that land was sold for $100 million cash.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Obviously, you know, come January, there will be a new batch, at least to some extent, of state legislators. Are you preparing to try to have some bills ready to go to try to address these situations come the new year?
Yes. And, you know, and I must say that I'm still working with my colleagues as well. You know, I'm working with supervisors out of Yuma, out of Mojave County, out of Yavapai, Cochise. You know, we're all collectively concerned about the same issue, and that is protecting our groundwater. So we're still working. There's still communications going on with the governor's office, with different legislatures that are still currently there. And those that will continue to be there in the next session. So, you know, there has been more communication, I think, in the last 2 years and more movement on water than there has been since this has become an issue for me in La Paz County. So that gives me some sort of hope.
All right. That is La Paz County Supervisor Holly Irwin. Supervisor Irwin, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. In Tribal Natural Resources, which is supported in part by a grant from the Katina Foundation. The Apache trout, Arizona's state fish, was removed from the federal endangered species list on Wednesday. As Nick Carmia reports, it's the first trout and sport fish to be taken off the list in U.S. history, and according to some, it's a symbol of hope.
Apache trout are not write-off populations. What they are harbingers of hope. They give us hope that we can actually take affirmative steps to make our landscapes more resilient to the effects of a changing climate.
That's Chris Wood, the president and CEO of Trout Unlimited, an organization he says has been helping Apache trout recovery efforts since the 1990s. Now the fish occupies over 175 miles of habitat. Arizona's state lead for Trout Unlimited, Nate Rees, says now is the time to maintain the fish's habitat so every kid has the opportunity to see thousands of golden Apache trout.
It doesn't mean we can throw up our hands and pat ourselves on the back. All this means, this delisting means, is we work harder and keep prolonging the habitat for this species to thrive in for future generations.
A $5.1 million investment from the Biden administration will continue to support conservation efforts. Nick Carmia, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In education news. A new survey released by the State Department of Education shows many teachers who didn't return this year left due to student behavior and discipline issues. State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Horn is using the report to push for new legislation. From the Education Desk, Bridget Dowd has details.
Horn says having administrators back the decisions of teachers when they discipline students will help them the most in the classroom. He wants legislation designed to penalize districts that don't back their teachers. Horn supported a proposal earlier this year which would have reduced the academic standings of schools whose administrators do not impose discipline at least 3 out of every 4 times requested by a teacher. Several Democrats said the issue should be dealt with at the local level. One suggested it was an effort to create more DNF-rated public schools, which would support rhetoric from some Republicans that public schools are failing kids and support the use of tax dollars to let parents send their children to private or parochial schools. Bridget Dowd, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In business news, an Arizona mom is suing the city of Surprise following her arrest at a city council meeting. Kirsten Dorman reports.
Rebecca Massey frequently attends city council meetings and was at this one to voice her disagreement with a proposal to increase the city attorney's salary. Then Mayor Skip Hall accused her of violating rules for public comment.
Do you want to be escorted out of here? Do you want to be escorted out of here?
You're violating my First Amendment rights.
Talking.
You are violating my First Amendment rights.
Attorney Connor Fitzpatrick says what followed was unconstitutional.
Out of nowhere, she's detained, placed in handcuffs, and then detained for 2 hours. Away from her 10-year-old daughter, who she has no idea where she is when she's being detained, all for exercising her First Amendment rights.
Fitzpatrick said the lawsuit means to discourage elected officials from policing public comment. Kirsten Dorman, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And finally, in Fronteras News. Mixed immigration status couples hoping to argue the merits of the Biden administration's Keeping Families Together program in court are not able to do so. That after the federal judge overseeing the case against the program denied their request to intervene. From the Fronteras desk in Tucson, Alisa Resnick reports.
The Keeping Families Together program gives an estimated 500,000 undocumented people married to U.S. citizens a pathway to permanent U.S. residency. The program's on hold right now after a federal judge sided with Texas and other states that sued to stop it. Attorney Harold Solis told reporters last week he filed a motion to intervene in the case on behalf of couples.
Imagine building a life in America for a decade or more, raising your children here, building a family here, contributing to your community, and yet living under the constant threat of separation from your loved ones.
District Judge J. Campbell Barker denied the request late Tuesday, arguing the couple's interests were already represented by Justice Department lawyers. Solis and other attorneys say they plan to appeal. Alisa Resnick, KJZZ News, Tucson.
And this has been the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. It's made possible in part by Helios Education Foundation and Alliance Bank, the Vitalist Health Foundation, the Intel Corporation and Beach Fleischman, the Arizona Community Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you for listening to KJZZ and for your generous support. I'm Tiara Vian. This is KJZZ, your news and information station.